We've been hearing from startup founders all over Latin America for a while now. We noticed a common reflection from those on a fundraising journey, how a simple and clean investment template could take away much of the friction. That's why we partnered up with law offices such as Gunderson Dettmer to launch Misto. Misto is a document for Brazil with optimized terms for investing, with language and practices understood and accepted by both founders and investors. Cristel Moreno is a partner at Gunderson, leads their São Paulo office, and was deeply involved in the creation of Misto. In this episode, Cristel and I talk about, from a legal standpoint, how dealing with startups in Latin America is different from dealing with traditional companies around the world. What exactly is Misto? What makes it unique in comparison to other startup investment templates? Finally, the advice Cristel would give startup founders with no legal experience. My name is Brian Reckworth, and this is Latitude Podcast. Vamos Latam. Great to have you on.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Cristel, let's start with a very basic question. What makes dealing with startup contracts so different from dealing with any corporate contract? Why do we need specific law offices that do startups?
That's a very good question. Because, you know, the law is the same, but the way we do things as startup lawyers is very different. So if you go to an M&A lawyer or a PE lawyer, they're likely going to complicate things. Whereas for startups, things are very standard, at least in the early stages. So you're looking at a SAFE or, you know, NVCA type of documents that are very standard and very balanced, right? So, you know, companies and investors, they have balanced rights and founders as well. So it's not super aggressive or super on one side or the other side, like in an M&A deal. And then the other thing is the terms actually survive with the company. We're looking at vesting, which is not something, you know, a one-off agreement that you sign and it's done. It's a done deal. It's something that will survive with the founder over time. It's the same thing with dilution, tag along, first refusal rights, and, you know, all of the standard rights that you're familiar with. They actually survive with the company and they're difficult to negotiate around in the future. So startup lawyers need to know what is market. And there's a very specific market. There's a very specific startup culture and VC culture and knowing the dynamics, right? And then the other thing is they're very math heavy. Post-money, pre-money, dilution. So a startup lawyer has to understand math. Not every lawyer does that.
It reminds me because when I got my first term sheet, I of course, like, read all this language, and I instantly called my friend who was a lawyer at Amazon, really smart guy, did his undergrad at Stanford, someone that I just really trust. And I remember we struggled over it a lot because he wasn't very familiar with the nuances of a startup term sheet. And then the second mistake that I see a lot of founders make, and I made at Viva Real, was that I hired a law firm that, again, didn't have wasn't specialized. And then there was just all kinds of naturally mistakes that, and I see a lot of founders like, oh, I know someone that's a lawyer. Let's talk a little bit about, you guys have an office in Sao Paulo, which you opened up, a year ago or something? Yeah, you opened it a year ago. Actually, I think it was right around the time we did the Vamos Latam Summit last year. Yeah. So good timing because we're just days away. So what makes dealing with startup law firms unique in Latin America in comparison to other regions? You're a global law firm with an office in Sao Paulo, but the roots are kind of New York, Silicon Valley. What do you see about the nuances of Latin America as a region?
So it's, again, I think the law is different in every country. So it's not something you can say about like the region itself, but there's a legal culture that's a little bit different. So if we have an investor that comes to us and say, hey, can you help us look into this investment we're going to make? And then suddenly there's a due diligence and there's a red flag. You know, everyone is hired as a contractor and not as an employee. Investor flips out, what's going on here? This sounds like a red flag. And then it's a matter of walking them through. Culturally in Brazil, it's very expensive, or Brazil or Mexico or elsewhere in Latin America, it's very expensive to hire everyone as an early stage startup as an employee. And so it's something that, you know, of course the company needs to be compliant with every law, but how can we set up a schedule to make sure that happens so that we don't kill the company because it needs to be compliant, right? So it's kind of knowing the nuances about doing business. It's more about how do you do business in these countries and not so much about the law itself. Of course, the law is different, but there are a lot of things that come with doing business that is different.
I am. I'm going to ask you as a lawyer that advise the safest route. But one of the things that I do see in my companies, when we hired our first people in Brazil, we could hire them pro labore, PJ, CLT, and the same goes with Colombia, Mexico. Is that going to be a big deal later down, you know, down the road when you go raise your Series A? Because there are legal liabilities that you have. What's a green flag, yellow flag, red flag? Break it down for me. If you could share with me, like, how do you make sure that you don't set any traps for yourself in the early days? And it's not in your interest to advise a founder to like, fazer o jeitinho brasileiro, como se fala em português. But founders do it. So what is the actual risk of that? And in reality, and what should you steer away from to make sure that you don't kind of shoot yourself in the foot for the future?
Yeah, so that's very Brazilian or, you know, Mexican, Colombian law related. So, you know, obviously consult with your local counsel to make sure you're aware of the risks. But the risk here really is getting sued by someone who's unhappy with their classification. And make sure you know who you're hiring. Make sure you don't know. You don't do it for, you know, if you have 30 employees that are misclassified. That's a lot. And at some point, you'll have to put them, you know, you'll have to do it by the book. Now, if you have three founders who are pro labore, that's, you know, that's understandable. And I do think that investors generally who invest in the region, they have come to terms with this in the sense that they understand that, you know, early stage companies have a way of doing things. And it's not because they want to do it this way. It's because they're, you know, striving to survive, and they will do things by the book later on, right? So red flag, if you're a Series D company and you're still doing this, then, you know, that's probably not a good way to go about it. But talk to other folks, see what other startups are doing, just see what
investors
are doing.
For the listeners that are unfamiliar, I'm sure if you're a founder, you're listening, you'd know this, but there's different ways to hire somebody, and there's a lot of implications in terms of taxes that. And so a lot of startups hire subcontractors. And this is not a podcast about legal advice. So don't construe any of this as legal advice. But, you know, it's relatively common. And, you know, probably in the early days, it's less of a risk. You know, but you probably want to be selective with who you hire in high trust positions if you're hiring as a subcontractor. Because, as you said, you know, the risk is that you get sued. And in fact, that happened to me. I will share a quick anecdote and story. I had an employee in Colombia, and in this case, it was a labor lawsuit where the employee had actually asked me to write a letter that basically increased the supposed salary so that he could qualify to rent an apartment. And against my better judgment, I did this years ago, and just to kind of help this person out. And that person proceeded to sue me for the delta of the salary that they actually had and what it said in the account, backdated for how long. So if you have all these expenses up front, and there's ways that you can kind of help reduce that within the bounds of not doing anything super crazy, like hiring a few subcontractors, it's not the end of the world. You're still going to be able to raise the next round of funding. It's not something the VCs will walk away from. But you need to make sure that you're really thoughtful and, you know, you do it in a way that's, and then you fix it when you're, because if you can't survive, you can't fix it in the future because you're not alive anymore. Now, Christel, we've seen, you know, these green flags, red flags, yellow flags over the years, you know, in different aspects. And one thing that we noticed was that there was some real issues with particularly founders that take investment in local entities, like whether that's a SAPI in Mexico or a Limitada in Brazil or a Sociedad Anónima Simplificada in Colombia. And one thing that we realize is that a lot of these, you know, term sheets or investment, you know, documents were quite, complicated and created some problems for the founders down the road. So we decided to partner with Gunderson and we created the Misto, which stands for Mutuo para Investimento Simplificado con Termos Otimizados. So it's a standardized investment template for those Brazilian startup founders raising their first capital. So Cristel, could you share with our audience what makes Misto, which for those that don't know, we like our carbs at Latitude. We have the Cayman sandwich. We've got a Delaware tostada. Now we have a Misto, which is like a ham and cheese sandwich in Brazil. So can you talk about what makes that unique in relation to other documents that we see around the world, the YC Safe? What characteristics does it have? And why is it unique?
Sure. Yeah, actually, it's a very, very exciting project. And I really do hope people start using it. But essentially, the Misto, what we tried to do was take the US Safe created by Y Combinator. I think it was created in around 2013, if I recall correctly. And essentially, for those of you who don't know what it is, a safe is an investment instrument that used by early stage startups in the US. And I would say like 90% of, you know, I'm guessing here, but like the vast majority of deals for early stage startups in the US is done via safes, investments via safes. And so what we tried to do was translate a safe into the Brazilian regulatory framework and what would work in Brazil, right? And so one of the key differences, and I'll just start here with the key difference between the safe and the Misto, because we haven't been able to make it an equity instrument in Brazil because there are some tax implications. And so the Misto is a multo conversivo. And so it's essentially a convertible note, a multo conversivo, but it has specific terms to it. And the essential characteristic is that it is a very lean document as compared to what we have been seeing in the market, which is all over the place in terms of governance rights, in terms of, you know, how much does each investor own in the company, pre-money, post-money, post-money with a discount. So that's not what the plan was for the Misto. So we created a post-money Misto, in which an investor and company know the rules around who owns what are pretty clear in the company. So there's cap table predictability and a discount Misto in case the company doesn't know, like can determine a valuation for the company at that point. And so those are the two first characteristics. And then the other thing is, even though it's a convertible note, it's a multo conversivo, we are able to have it without interest rate, right? So it's very founder friendly in the sense that, you know, the investors are really buying an instrument that is as similar to equity as possible within the legal possibility. It's ready to use. I think there are 10 blanks that need to be filled out, which is great as compared to what we have been seeing in the market with, you know, again, so many different terms. And it has a feature that has a pre-approval for a flip. So you won't have to seek, a company won't have to seek signatures from a bunch of investors to do a flip from a Brazilian structure to a Cayman Island structure or to an LLC structure, which is awesome. Really,
yeah, it's going to reduce a lot of friction for founders. And, you know, it's that pre-approval. It is so important. Why is it for important sure. to have that just for the audience? It obviously makes it much more efficient, but what's the problem that you were seeing in the past?
So what I have dealt with this so many times with, you know, like hopefully we say like a company won't have more than like in early stage 20 investors, but we know that's not true, especially in the market as it is, right? So there are companies with like 60 investors and the founder doesn't necessarily know all of these people. Maybe it was like one angel investor that actually gathered a lot of other angel investors. And so sometimes the company can't get a hold of one of the investors, or it actually needs to negotiate with, you know, 60 investors. How and why are we doing a flip when it's something so basic these days? So we're going to reduce that friction in the sense that there's no negotiation around the flip itself. If the terms are the same, if there's no economic or, you know, any other damage to the investor as a result of the flip, the flip will be done.
And obviously, just for the audience listening, like, this is a great document if you're an early stage founder and you're raising locally in Brazilian Limitada. You can use the template, but you obviously probably do want to consult your law firm on, you know, some of the details. But ideally, and I got a lot of messages recently from founders that actually have started using it, and they're really happy because it reduces the cost. Yes, I've had a handful. I can send you a few cases.
Oh, really?
That have actually been happy because they've been able to reduce the cost because it's much lighter to use an existing template. Which we were trying to do is bring down the cost for these early stage founders, because you don't want to saddle, you know, a founder with tons of expenses in the beginning. This is, you know, a resource that you could be using to hire your first team or first people. So now we have Misto for Brazilian startups and startup founders and investors. What other changes do we need to push so that legislation and contracts become more friendly to the startup ecosystem all over LATAM?
So, I would say, like, first off, and I know that we do have the Misto now, but I do want to get the message out that, you know, and I'm happy to hear that people are actually starting to use it, but it will be a very, very strong tool if it becomes market practice. So that's one of the things I would love to see in all countries in the region, and, you know, starting with Brazil, which is an instrument that can make early stage investment easy and that is standard in market and that people can trust. And when I say people, I mean companies, founders, and investors can trust and use and you know, just streamline the process in a way that will, as like you said, you know, reduce costs, reduce friction. And so that's the first thing. I would love to see standard market practice culture in Latin America. The other thing is for, you know, generally no messing around taxation. It's an emotional roller coaster to do business in Brazil and in Mexico and Colombia, because we know that laws are always changing. And we've had one project, like a law a few months ago, that has been changed again. And so we never know what we're dealing with, what we're going to expect. And so to have not so much one specific rules, but just to make sure that they are good over time, and it's something that we can trust that is not going to change over time, that would be great. But that's something that obviously depends on a lot more than both of us. It's very politics driven. So that seems to be
out of our scope.
Yes,
it's a bit out of our scope.
Let's start
right?
with the Misto, maybe.
Yeah, you gotta. My mom used to always say, you know, think global, act local. You start with your community and solve the problems for your community, and then you can maybe have a bigger platform as time goes on. I'd love to hear, you know, some final advice that you'd give to LATAM founders listening today, looking to succeed in scaling their startups and making an impact in Latin America with no experience in the legal world.
I would say try to keep things simple. And I know that investment terms, they seem very complicated, but they should be straightforward and they should follow, like I said, a market term. So if you're dealing with an investor and you're negotiating a financing round for 6 months, that's a red flag. Early investment and early stage companies, their legal issues and the legal contracts should be straightforward and should be simple. So that's what from a legal perspective, I would advise founders to look for. Essentially, keeping things simple. And then the other thing is, know your cap table, know who's on your cap table, know how much each person on your cap table owns. I know it sounds very basic, but a lot of companies don't know that. And that's a concern. And if you know that, and if you can manage that, that's a green flag. You're doing well.
Yeah, particularly, I think there's two things to highlight here is that the this is a template. So the beginning of what you do, you know, you set a precedent for what comes next, right? No investor, you accept some terms that are very aggressive, you know, 3x liquidation preference, like no other founder, no other investor is going to be like, oh, that's fine. They're going to want that too. And so you need to, you know, from the very beginning, it's good to get it right, because if you screwed up in the beginning, it's going to compound over time. I think that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is be careful with a lot of these instruments. If you stack up a lot of post-money convertible notes, reiterating what you said is you might not know actually how much of the company you own at some point because you've got them at kind of stacked up on top of each other. And so you need to make sure you do the math on how much equity you're actually giving up. And I definitely want to kind of reiterate that if it's taking a super long time and the fund is, or the investor is kind of dragging you through the mud over multiple iterations and it's, you know, 6 months, 7 months and you, things are working. This should be relatively simple, particularly at the early days. You know, if there's interest and, you know, you got to kind of get to the heart of that quickly and then move on. Because it's nothing worse than you're a founder and you're kind of led on and then you're kind of wasting your time because it's valuable time. So I think that's a great point. Thank you so much for, you know, coming on, and we're excited to see you at the Vamos Latam Summit. It's just right around the corner. And, Gunderson has been a great partner to Latitude since day zero. And so we look forward to continuing to support each other and elevate the ecosystem.
No, thank you. Thank you, Brian. I'm a huge fan and very much looking forward to Vamos Latam Summit. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing, you know, kind of a tightly packed conversation, some really important things for founders to know as it relates to legal stuff. So thank you for that.
Thank you for listening to Latitude Podcast. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast for more talks with great founders and investors. I'm your host, Brian Reckworth. Vamos Latam. See you next week.